Hello and welcome to Necco Radio. This is your local sports update from Manchester. Welcome to the debate.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's quite a match we've got to unpack today.
It really is. There's a tendency in football analysis, you know, to look at a 90-minute match as this clean binary equation, like structural engineering or something.
Right.
You calculate the load, you lay the steel, and if the bridge sags even an inch under the weight, well, you point and say the structure has failed.
Yeah, you panic.
Exactly. But when you step into the world of elite football tactics, and specifically when you're evaluating a team's performance over a grueling 90 minutes against a highly organized Premier League defense, that rigid engineering standard, it kind of just falls apart.
It does.
We are often looking at a performance landscape that is incredibly murky.
Oh, it is the absolute definition of diagnostic muddy waters. I mean, because in football, unlike engineering, a structure can look like it is buckling, creaking, and outright collapsing for 84 minutes, only to somehow, you know, hold up the weight of the result at the final whistle.
Right, exactly.
So the question then becomes, was the structure brilliantly flexible, or did you just get away with a catastrophic failure?
And that brings us right to the focal point of today's discussion. So just to set the timeline for everyone tuning in, we're talking about the August 23, 2026 Premier League fixture at the Etihad Stadium.
Right.
Where Manchester City secured a incredibly dramatic 2-1 victory over Bournemouth. So I just want to run through the chronology of this quickly for the listeners.
Yeah, lay it out.
So Marcus Tavernier scores the opening goal for Bournemouth.
Great finish.
Excellent finish. And Bournemouth, they remained in front for most of the game. I mean, the vast majority of the match. Manchester City, it has to be said, they really struggled to create an effective response.
Toothless. Yeah.
But then Enzo Maresca makes a change. Ryan Cherki comes on during the second half, and he completely helps change the match. He delivers the corner from which Mark Gahey equalizes in the 84th minute.
Yep.
And then, in added time, Cherki provides the ball for Josh Guardiola's winning goal. Now, the assistant referee initially indicated offside, which, you know, sucked the air out of the stadium.
Oh, totally. You could feel it.
But VAR reviewed the incident, confirmed Guardiola's goal was legal, and Manchester City completed this dramatic 2-1 comeback.
Just chaos.
Chaos. So we are going to look closely at the central tension here. Does this late comeback signify an elite, resilient mentality under Enzo Maresca, or does trailing for most of the match at home against Bournemouth expose severe vulnerabilities in a squad that, as the reports say, remains a quote-unquote work in progress?
Right.
I will be taking the position that this late turnaround, it highlights profound tactical adaptability and championship resilience.
And I will take the opposing view. I will argue that struggling to break down an opponent for 84 minutes at home, well, it reveals deep systemic flaws that late-game heroics only temporarily mask.
Okay. Let's start by laying out our core positions on how to interpret this result. From my perspective, you know, football at the highest level is fundamentally defined by overcoming adversity. The sport is not played on a tactical spreadsheet.
Sure.
It is played against dynamic, desperate opponents who have their own game plans. If we look at the factual timeline of this match, Manchester City faced a significant, undeniable deficit. They went behind to that Tavernier goal, and I'm the first to admit they struggled.
Massively.
But they adjusted effectively when it mattered most. We have to highlight Ryan Cherki's decisive impact here.
Oh, absolutely.
He comes onto the pitch, and he provides the corner for Gahey in the 84th minute, and then he delivers the assist for Guardiola in added time. Executing under such immense, suffocating late-game pressure, I mean, to me, that validates Enzo Maresca's in-game management. They found the solution when the problem was at its absolute most complex.
See, I hear that, but we cannot allow the euphoria of a stoppage time winner to just rewrite the history of the preceding 84 minutes.
I'm not rewriting it. I'm just...
Well, but we have to focus on the broader context. Bournemouth took the lead, right? Through Marcus Tavernier. And they held that lead for the vast, vast majority of the match. And while they held it, Manchester City didn't just look patient. They looked genuinely bereft of ideas.
I wouldn't say bereft of ideas.
They actively struggled to find an equalizer. I mean, relying on an 84th-minute deflected header and a razor-thin VAR decision in added time to rescue 3 points at home, it's simply unsustainable. When you zoom out from the final whistle, the performance heavily underscores the reality that Maresca's team is fundamentally incomplete. You cannot build a title-winning foundation on stoppage time desperation.
I know anyone listening to this on Netcoff Radio who watched that first 80 minutes might be inclined to agree with you. The visual of City, you know, cycling the ball in that sort of U-shape around Bournemouth's penalty area without penetrating, it was agonizing.
It was painful watch.
But I think we need to rethink how we evaluate that struggle. You're calling it systemic ineffectiveness, but I look at it as the necessary friction of breaking down a low block.
Necessary friction?
Yes, necessary friction. Let's talk about Maresca's use of Ryan Shirky. You don't start every match with your most direct line breaker on the pitch. In modern elite tactics, deploying a specific profile like Shirky later in the game isn't a desperate rescue mission. It's a deliberate exploitation of shifting spatial dynamics.
Let me stop you there, because the phrase shifting spatial dynamics, it can sometimes be used to mask a very simple reality, which is that City couldn't pass through them. Are you arguing that Maresca intentionally allowed his team to look toothless for 80 minutes just to set up a substitution? Because that sounds like applying retrospective genius to what is really a primary tactical failure.
No, not at all. I'm not saying it was the plan to go down 1-0. Obviously, conceding to Tavernier was a failure in defensive transition.
Huge failure.
But the inability to score early is what I want to focus on. Elite systems act like pressure valves. It's not always about scoring in minute 5. It's about relentlessly applying physical and mental load until the opponent's defense inevitably fractures.
Okay, but...
Let me finish this thought. Bournemouth parked 8 men within the width of the penalty area, completely choking off the central passing lanes. The system Maresca deployed was functioning to keep Bournemouth pinned back, right? Forcing them to expend massive amounts of energy shifting side to side.
Yeah, they were running a lot.
Exactly. That physical toll on the defenders' legs and necks, that is the very mechanism that allowed Shirky to eventually find pockets of space. It's cumulative pressure. It's like metal fatigue. You bend a piece of metal back and forth 80 times, it doesn't snap. But on the 81st time, it breaks.
Okay, that's a fascinating analogy, but it completely ignores the very real risk profile of playing that way. If the plan is cumulative pressure, it relies on the absolute guarantee that your own defense won't concede while you're busy fatiguing the opponent.
Well?
But they did concede. Tavernier scored. So the primary tactical setup failed on both ends of the pitch. It failed to break Bournemouth down early, and it failed to contain their transitional threat. A manager doesn't draw up a game plan that relies on being completely neutralized for 80 minutes. They survive their own systemic ineffectiveness. Yes, Cherki's substitution was brilliant, but we cannot conflate a phenomenal individual cameo with a brilliant overarching tactical plan.
I think separating the individual from the tactical plan is where we disagree most fundamentally. You say they lacked a coherent mechanism to break Bournemouth down, yet Maresca identified the specific nature of the stagnation, he introduced Cherki, and the mechanism was instantly fixed.
But what actually was that mechanism? Because from where I was watching, it looked less like a systemic fix and more like, give the ball to our most creative player and pray he does something extraordinary.
It wasn't just a prayer. The mechanism was half-space occupation and direct dribbling gravity. Before Cherki came on, City's wingers were staying extremely wide, trying to stretch a Bournemouth defensive line that simply refused to stretch. They stayed compact.
Very compact, yeah.
When Cherki came on, he didn't just hug the touchline. He operated in the half spaces, you know, those crucial vertical channels right between Bournemouth's center backs and fullbacks. Because of his specific dribbling profile, when he receives the ball there and drives forward, he forces a center back to step out of the defensive line to confront him.
Right. And that leaves a gap.
Exactly. The moment that defender steps out, the structure is broken. That's the tactical mechanism. It wasn't magic. It was the targeted application of a specific player's gravity to collapse a tired block.
I will certainly concede that Cherki's positioning altered the geometry of the final third. His ability to manipulate the ball under immense pressure, it was magnificent. But let's look at the actual output of that geometry. Let's look at the mechanics of the goals themselves, because this is where the inevitability argument falls apart for me.
How so?
We need to dissect the sheer fragility of these moments. Gehi's equalizer in the 84th minute, it did not cleanly beat Georgia Petrovic. It required a deflection. A deflection is, by definition, an uncontrolled variable. It is sheer luck.
But is it really luck? I think we have to understand the mechanism behind luck in football. A deflection is an uncontrolled variable? Yes, but how do you force that variable to occur? You do it by forcing a corner.
Well, obviously.
You do it by repeatedly delivering dangerous balls into heavily populated penalty areas. You do it by forcing Bournemouth to defend desperately inside their own 6-yard box. The deflection past Petrovic wasn't a lottery ticket bought at random. It was the statistical probability of City's territorial dominance finally paying out.
I don't know if I buy that.
Think about it. When you put the ball into a mixer of bodies that many times, the physics dictate that eventually an uncontrolled variable will favor the attacking team.
Okay. Let's say I grant you the statistical probability of the deflection. What about the winner in added time?
Okay.
Cherokee provides the ball to Joshko Gvardiol. He scores, and the assistant referee immediately raises the flag for offside.
Right, which was terrifying for a moment.
It was, and it takes a VAR review, a process dealing in literal millimeters and pixel lines drawn on a monitor, to overturn the call and confirm the goal was legal. Needing a deflection to tie the game and needing VAR to overturn an offside call in added time, that points to survival by the narrowest of margins. When a performance relies on these microscopic coin flip margins to turn a home defeat into a victory, we have to question the process that led to those moments.
See, I look at those margins and I see exactly what an elite attack is supposed to do against the low block. The fact that Gvardiol's run was tight enough to require a VAR review doesn't mean they were lucky. It means City was operating on the absolute bleeding edge of the opponent's defensive line.
Bleeding edge is right.
When a team drops as deep as Bournemouth did, there is virtually no space behind them. To exploit what little space exists, your attackers have to time their runs to the millisecond. Gvardiol did that. It was mathematically verified by VAR. You're judging them on an alternate reality where they failed rather than the reality where they executed when the margins were the tightest.
I'm judging them on the reality that if the ball deflects an inch to the left, Petrovic saves it. If Gvardiol leans a millimeter further forward, the offside stands. If either of those things happened, we aren't talking about resilience today on this station. We are talking about a catastrophic failure by Enzo Maresca to prepare his team to impose their will. And that brings us to the ultimate evaluation of this project. The reports explicitly note that this performance showed the team remains a work in progress. I view that phrase as a heavy, heavy indictment of where Manchester City is right now.
I find that fascinating because I view being a work in progress as a completely neutral, if not positive, reality of tactical evolution. Maresca is making his Premier League return. He is implementing a highly complex system with a squad that is still adapting to his demands. I have to question if you are demanding an unrealistic standard of perfection here. I mean, is there any team in the world that is fully formed in August?
There is a difference between not being fully formed and lacking structural integrity. When you are managing Manchester City, the standard is control. The expectation is that you dictate the terms of engagement from the first whistle to the last, especially at home against a team like Bournemouth.
But Bournemouth played well.
They did. But this performance exposed that City do not yet have that control. Elite teams do not struggle to formulate an effective response for 80 minutes. They don't look structurally barren. The defining takeaway of this match is that Maresca's system is fundamentally incomplete.
But an incomplete system that can still generate a memorable Premier League return by winning matches, that is incredibly dangerous. Securing 3 points while still being a work in progress is the ultimate hallmark of a title-contending side. The cliche that, you know, winning when playing poorly is the mark of champions, it exists for a reason.
It's a tired cliche, though.
But it's true. If they can beat a resilient, deeply entrenched Bournemouth side 2-1 when their system is misfiring, imagine what they will do when the tactical automated movements are fully dialed in. You are looking at the struggle and seeing a ceiling. I am looking at the struggle and seeing a floor. Their absolute worst, most stagnant performance still resulted in a victory.
I caution against projecting future success onto present dysfunction. The winning one playing poorly cliche is very often a smokescreen for systemic vulnerabilities that eventually catch up to. Yes, grinding out a result is valuable in the short term, but there's a massive difference between having an off day where your strikers just miss their chances and being systematically stifled by a mid-table low block. City didn't just lack a finishing touch. For over an hour, they lack the collective execution to even create high-quality chances.
I disagree that the collective execution was missing. I would argue it just arrived late. Cherki's assists didn't happen in a vacuum.
Well, mostly they did.
No, he didn't just dribble past 11 players and score by himself. Let's look at the collective requirements of those goals. Mark Gurry had to fight through a crowded penalty area, read the flight of the corner perfectly, and position himself to win that header. Gvardiol, a defender, by the way,
yeah,
which was wild, he had to possess the tactical awareness to push high into the final third and added time, recognize the exact moment Cherki was going to release the pass, and make an incredibly precise run to stay onside. The system put those players in the position to capitalize on Cherki's delivery. That is collective execution, driven by a relentless mentality.
A collective execution that was completely absent for the first 83 minutes. You cannot ignore the overwhelming sample size of the match in favor of a six-minute highlight reel. If Cherki has an off day, or if Bournemouth marks him slightly tighter when he comes on, City loses that match. A work in progress that relies on one player providing two moments of magic to rescue the tactical setup is a house of cards. The late finishes mask the deficiencies. They do not cure them.
I don't think they mask them. I think they provide the time and the breathing room necessary for Maresca to fix them in training without the pressure of dropped points.
You're listening to Nakoff Radio. After such a dramatic ending, we now want to hear the reaction of a Manchester City supporter.
Yes, absolutely.
Manchester City were losing for most of the match before scoring twice in the final minute. What did you think of the team's performance, and what was your reaction when Gvardiol scored the winning goal? Thank you for sharing your reaction with the listeners of Neko Radio.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, hearing that, it really echoes the emotional whiplash of the day.
It really does. I mean, the relief is palpable, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. But you also hear that underlying frustration about the first 80 minutes. They know the team got away with one.
Well, they know the team had to work incredibly hard for it. I think as we begin to summarize our positions in light of this discussion, I firmly maintain my stance that this comeback proves the underlying resilience of Maresca's project.
The narrative of this match isn't defined by the 80 minutes of struggle. It is defined by the solution that was ultimately found. Fueled by Cherki's brilliant dual assists and the clinical, high-pressure late finishes from Gehi and Gvardiol, Manchester City demonstrated that they possess the tactical adaptability and mental fortitude to overcome severe adversity. The fact that they achieved this while still being a work in progress, to me, it only highlights their immense potential. They faced a complex problem and they solved it.
And I maintain that the prolonged struggle is far more indicative of City's current state than the frantic, chaotic final moments. The inability to break down Bournemouth's low block for the vast majority of the game, the vulnerability shown in conceding the opening goal to Marcus Tavernier, and the ultimate reliance on a deflected goal past Petrovic and a VAR-reviewed winner highlight serious structural deficiencies. Maresca has a monumental task ahead of him to turn this incomplete project into a reliable, dominant force. You can only survive on the bleeding edge of the margins for so long before you get cut.
I think where we absolutely converge, however, is on the undeniable impact of Rayon Cherki. Regardless of how we view the tactical setup of the preceding 80 minutes, his individual contribution was the undisputed catalyst for the victory. He changed the geometry of the pitch the exact moment he stepped on.
Oh, unquestionably. We can debate whether City should have needed him to be a savior, but his execution in that role was flawless. To find those deliveries under that level of pressure, against a defense that had been impenetrable all afternoon, it requires a special kind of talent. And I will certainly concede that Maresca's return to the Premier League was undeniably dramatic. He got the 3 points, even if I deeply question the sustainability of his method.
It's a fascinating reflection on how football analysis works, isn't it? We constantly have to balance the harsh, objective reality of a 90-minute struggle against the visceral, undeniable euphoria of stoppage time execution. We want it to be clean and binary, but it never is. Both truths exist simultaneously on the pitch. They were simultaneously stagnant and brilliant.
They were. And it suggests that anyone listening today will need to pay very close attention to City's upcoming fixtures. We need a larger sample size to see which narrative truly defines Maresca's tenure. Are we watching the teething problems of a future champion, or the early warning signs of a flawed system.
Exactly. We started this discussion by talking about structural integrity, about how we evaluate a bridge under immense stress. You calculate the load, and you watch to see if it holds. Today, Manchester City's structure creaked.
Definitely.
It groaned. It bent under the weight of Bournemouth's resolve. But in the end, it held. Whether that's a sign of brilliant, flexible engineering that bends without breaking, or a warning of an imminent, catastrophic failure down the road, is something only time will tell. So summarizing the final result, Manchester City 2, Bournemouth 1. Mark Gay equalized in the 84th minute before Joshko Gvardiol scored the winning goal in added time.
What a match.
You have been listening to the Sports Update on Nikoff Radio, the voice of our community. Stay connected to Nikoff Radio for more news and sport from Manchester, Stockport, and beyond.